Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Sammy Jacobs. Co-host TJ Inman will be here shortly. We're here to break down the Indiana-Nebraska game. And go over what went wrong. The final score was 27-22, narrow victory for number 10 Nebraska, who's since moved up to number 8. So we'll go over what went wrong, what we liked, didn't like, and the outlook of the rest of the season. So right now, Indiana stands at 3-3, 1-2 in the Big Ten, and they head up to Northwestern on Saturday for a noon kickoff with the Wildcats. We're going to bring in TJ Inman right now. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sammy. Yeah, it's always good to talk football, even in a frustrating loss to a top 10 team. You know, decompressing after that game, I can't really shake the feeling that Indiana's never, or at least not in the foreseeable future, going to have an opportunity as good as that one to beat a top 10 team at home. It's a frustrating loss. Just like Ohio State, it leaves you partially very encouraged that Indiana was, again, against a traditional power right there. And really, if we're honest with ourselves, outplayed them for the most part, especially after that bad start. And then it leaves you equal parts frustrated that, you know, couldn't pull it off due to a number of factors that we'll talk about here in this next half hour. So, yeah, just another, I think you said it pretty accurately after the game with Alex and I, just another gut punch. And that's really what that one felt like, just a missed opportunity that hopefully we don't rue too much at the end of the season.
Yeah, it was frustrating in the sense of, look, any time a top 10 team comes into Memorial Stadium, you'd like to win. And, you know, the last couple years, you've had guys on the ropes and looking to punch through. Now, if you were in a vacuum just looking at, hey, Indiana stayed with the top 10 team, you know, you'd be encouraged. But I think the most frustrating part was that Indiana had Nebraska almost knocked out. You know, the score, I believe it was 17-15 at the time, and Tony Fields makes a pick. I was sitting in the stands on Saturday, and the place was going absolutely nuts. He made that interception, all the momentum was on IU's side. You know, they had just scored on a Redding touchdown, 33-yard run, which was a great play call that, you know, great play calls have been few and far between for IU, but that they are there. But to me, and then to throw a screen pass and have two runs and punt the ball, that to me was the game right there. They let them up off the mat and to steal Dennis Green line is we thought Nebraska, who you know, they were what we thought they were, and we let them off the hook, and that's exactly what IU did. We said for a week that Nebraska was an overrated team, that they had not been tested all that much this year, that they kind of were gifted a top 10 position after all the upsets and losses last week. And that's what they were. This Nebraska team played well. They're a good team. But you saw that Tommy Armstrong has not figured it out yet, throwing the deep ball. They got a lucky bounce on one of the plays where I thought Marcelino Ball played it perfectly. And at first I thought it was an incomplete pass, but it was a ridiculous circus catch that led to a touchdown. And then you had three defenders collide on the other touchdown. And other than that, Nebraska couldn't get anything going. Tommy Armstrong, I believe, was 10, only had 10 completions on 20-something throws. And it just didn't look good. And I thought, you know, IU played well, and they should have won that game. And it comes down to, you know, did Kevin Wilson have and Kevin Johns have the guts to take a shot downfield after getting the ball after that interception? And they didn't do it, and they paid dearly for it. You know, the most puzzling thing is that if you don't trust your offense, why are you, you know, why bother? And then Nebraska went and scored a touchdown to go back up 9, and the offense comes back and scores, I think, in 3 or 4 plays, and they took a good shot down to Ricky Jones. He caught the ball and was down inside the 5, and then they had a screen pass to Redding for a touchdown. Where was that urgency, you know, one drive earlier when you could have taken the lead, either with the field goal or with the touchdown, and really delivered that knockout blow, which has been lacking in Indiana football? It's, you had this team on the ropes, you had them, you know, stunned, and you know, Tommy Armstrong couldn't complete a pass downfield. I mean, every pass was, you know, it was like that sixth grade pickup football game pass where you have the guy with the best arm just tell everybody to go deep, and he just chucks it up wildly as, you know, defenders run after him. But to me, that cost them the game, and I have no idea what their game plan was there. And it was just that's the most frustrating part, was that they had a shot to win, a legitimate shot to knock them out, and they decided to, you know, wait. If it was a boxing match, they basically held them up against the ropes and waited for the bell to ring. And you know what? They missed their shot, and they missed the bus, and you know, the rest is history. So that's the frustrating part to me.
Yeah, I think that's a very understandable line of thinking and criticism in this case. Particularly, two things that are pretty curious to me at the moment. The first would be that 3rd-and-8 play call essentially is passing on an opportunity to get a first down. And I don't mean passing as in actually throwing the ball. I mean just, you know, taking the 3rd down and saying, you know, we'd rather punt. That's all right. And I know that that's not what they were doing, but it comes across as that because the running game, with the exception of that Divine Redding run, which was not a traditional running play, with the exception of that run, the running game was virtually non-existent. You know, even including that run, they ran for under 3 yards to carry. Nebraska's front was doing a nice job.
Right. I mean, if you take out the Xander run, the Mitchell Page reverse, which was, you know, the kind of play they scored on the touchdown, they handed it off to Redding instead of, he faked the handoff to Page and everybody bit. And it was just, that play was set up well and ran well. But other than that, it was like, you know,
runs were nothing. Yeah.
No, it's the same stuff, you know, since Wake Forest. It's, we're going to run Divine Redding into the middle of the defense, try and get him outside maybe, and hope for the best. And it's just not working. And I understand the fans' frustration with it in terms of it looks like they're running the same play. It's insanity. It is the definition of insanity, is you're trying the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Kind of emblematic of the entire running game for the day, at least for the running backs on traditional running plays is what I'll call them. And then it's kind of in conjunction with that, I don't really know why there appears to be a major hesitancy to let Richard Legault throw the ball vertically. And his pass per attempt or his yards per attempt are still tops in the Big Ten. But they're not really letting him stretch on throws down the sideline very often. And I feel like he's been pretty successful with those, and I think that there was an opportunity against Nebraska's secondary to get that done. And against Northwestern coming up, there absolutely is an opportunity for that. We'll talk about that later in the week and preview that all week on our site. But I'm going to be really interested to see whether or not they will open up the passing game to some vertical passes. I think Ricky Jones right now is doing an incredible job catching the deep ball. We know Nick Westbrook can do it. I'm really going to be interested to see if they allow that to happen, because right now, particularly on the right side of that line, you are seeing the impact of not having Dan Feeney. If people don't understand how good he is before, I really hope they understand it now, because the running game, especially to that right side on the stretch play, is completely non-existent without him.
And that's a play the last couple years where IU's gotten a lot of big plays where, you know, that's the play Tevin Coleman scores on at Ohio State and two steps and he's in the end zone, and where Jordan Howard consistently got 8-9 yards where, you know, they get the blocking set up, and if somebody squirted through, Howard ran him over, and basically how they shredded Michigan last year. So you're completely right, and I think if writers keep him off their All-American list because he hasn't played, they're undervaluing him. I understand why you'd keep him off the list because of an injury, but that just shows you how good and how valuable he is. And if there was, you know, the fantasy baseball equivalent of a DL for All-American teams, of having a guy on the roster that you could plug in if he's healthy, he's got to be on that list, because he makes this offense go. And it's not a joke when Wilson calls him the most important player on this team. And you've seen it now since the second half of Ball State, is this running game is non-existent. And even with Xander running the ball at quarterback, and I know he threw the ball 7 times and ran the ball pretty well, but after the first 3 plays, Nebraska figured it out, and they stuffed it. And, you know, the one pass that Mitchell Page caught out of the screen from Xander, that was an awful throw. It was behind the receiver, and if Mitchell Page doesn't make a guy miss, that's a loss of 3 or 4 yards, and everything's done. So to me,
and they took a deep shot with Xander at quarterback.
Oh,
they did take
wide
a deep shot down
guy.
The field, and it was there. I think it was it Donovan Hale? Is that?
I think it was Hale down there. I'll watch it over again. You know, but
he was there. He was open, and it was overthrown. So.
Yep, and you know, it was there, and they had the play, and it's just becoming so predictable in terms of what you're going to do, and you're not going to surprise anybody else now with Xander Diamant running that quarterback position. It's on tape. Everybody knows that. Either it's going to be a screen pass, or he's going to fake a handoff and run with it and try to outrun everybody, and he can't do that in the Big Ten every week.
I'll give him credit, and I'll give the coaches credit, because I think when they did choose to put him in there, he executed what was in front of him nicely on that,
yeah,
that first series
them,
he came
that
in.
That first series he came in,
it gave a spark.
Yeah, mid-series, it ignited a spark. IU was down, I think, 17-2 or something at the time, and he got down inside the 5. They couldn't convert. And you saw, well, they him in the red zone. I just don't know if you could trust him to make the right play. He gets sacked on a play and forces them to take a field goal. Now, I don't know if, you know, you throw an incomplete pass and it's 4th and goal from the 3. So you go for it to take the points. But, you know, if you get sacked outside of the 5, you know, between the 5 and the 10, you're on 4th down, you're kicking the field goal. Unless you're like the Colts or somebody. But to me, it was a nice change of pace at the time. and they ran into the ground, and it became a predictable thing that may not have an effect the rest of the season against good opponents. Now, could they run it against Purdue and Rutgers and Penn State, whose rush defense is suspect best? Maybe. But, you know, against a team like Nebraska, who has the team speed that they do, and they're underrated fast. On that team, that was the one thing that jumped off the page for me about Nebraska was their defense is pretty fast. So, you know, to me, they burned that card way too quickly. And now you have to look at, you know, why, you know, if you're going to have questions with Lego, is Xander the guy who could give you the best chance to win? Or is he the guy that comes in for a couple plays, a drive, could get you a first down, and ignite the crowd? But what's Austin King doing? It's his second year on campus now. He has a good arm, and, you know, his red shirt, he's redshirted a year. So, you know, let's see what you have in him if you don't trust Lego to throw the ball. And I know why they don't trust Lego. He's too inconsistent throwing downfield. I don't know if it's a mechanical thing, but he missed a couple wide open receivers downfield where ball just sailed. The most notable one besides that pick at the end of the game was, I think Nick Westbrook was open for a 50-yard gain, and he just threw the ball like 6 feet over his head.
Yeah, that one was open. Yeah, and that's been a good throw for him all year, really. It's that out route. It's been a good throw for him. He doesn't miss that very often, but I didn't think he was bad on Saturday, but he wasn't great.
No, he wasn't
either.
Awful, but I could understand why the coaching staff doesn't trust him, and I think they lost a lot of trust after the Wake Forest game where he threw the 5 interceptions, and, you know, I think that's in the head of the coaching staff, and I'd like to think that it's mental, is that they're not calling these plays because of that game and the throws that he made in that game, where we've seen Richard Lego make great throws at times, and we've also seen him make awful throws at times. And when you have a quarterback who's a gunslinger like that, you're going to have to let it rip and live with the interception sometime.
Yep, I would agree with that. And you know, I'm overall okay with the general offensive philosophy that they have. I think that they trust the defense a lot more, which they should. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's a little bit too, I don't know if conservative is the word, but I think there is kind of a lack of trust, and I don't think it's too far off. Like, I don't think we're too far off of having, you know, a really nice 35, 38 point day on offense. I don't think we're too far off of that. It is just a little bit off, and there is an opportunity here in this next 3-game stretch where, you know, that could, if they can just tweak it a little bit, plus get Damfini back, I think we could see a pretty dramatic improvement in the production of the offense. I don't know if that's going to happen right now. I don't have incredible confidence that it will, but I do think it's fair to say that playing against Northwestern, Maryland, and Rutgers
is going to look a little better
than playing against Ohio State and Nebraska. I think that's fair
and
to
Wake
say.
Forest and, you know, well, it's hard to tell Michigan, put Michigan State in that group, but Wake Forest has a tremendous defense as well. So, you know, I was talking to somebody else today about this. You know, let's see what this running game does against Rutgers and Maryland and Northwestern and go off of that. If they still can't run the ball against those teams, then you got a problem. If they can,
then
it's
broke if Gainey is back, right? I mean,
yes.
There's, and the update on him is still, and we'll continue to get asked this, and I understand because it is really important, and I do feel like, you know, dedicated fans that pay attention do understand how important he could be, or at least they understand that he is important. So, you know, we understand that people will continue asking, point blank, we don't know. I mean, all that we have is what Kevin Wilson says, which is pretty much the same thing he has said for the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, he might as well just run out there with a tape recorder and he's doing more. But yeah,
that's good to hear, but you know, that doesn't mean he's playing. We don't know. I mean, I just really, really, really hope he's back for this stretch of three games because it's critical, and he's proven to be an invaluable piece of the offense. We knew that coming in, and we're not wrong. So hopefully he's back. And like you said, if the running game is still a detriment to the offense's success, during this three-game stretch against these three teams, if we're still seeing, you know, 3.5 yards a carry, then it's not getting fixed.
I mean, that's still a full yard over the averages the last couple games. They need to get this running game going. It opens up the passing game. It makes this offense so much more dynamic and better. The other thing that stood out to me, TJ, is IU is 1 for 11 on fourth downs this year.
Right.
And they've left a lot of points on the field. And I thought they left 2 field goals on the field on Saturday when they elected to go for it on 4th and 6, which it would have been a 52-yard field goal. So I believe the ball was at the 36. So it would have been, you know, 52, 53 yards. With the wind at Griffin Oaks, and then they passed up on a 49-yarder, which is a reasonable kick with the wind, with Oaks. Apparently, after the game, Kevin Wilson said Oaks has been dealing with a quad issue. It's been affecting his range, which to me is, you have enough kicker on the roster. Aaron Del Grosso is still there. Sure, he had an issue, but, you know, he didn't hit his girlfriend. They got into an argument over a dog. You know, it should have been a one-game suspension. Why are you holding him out and costing yourself points to make a point?
The second half of that quote, if I'm not mistaken, is he's the best one we got. So,
yeah,
I guess that his feeling is that even – a not 100% Griffin Oaks, which the announcers mentioned the quad issue during the game. So he had let them know about it beforehand. If his feeling, I guess, is that even a not 100% Griffin Oaks is better than the alternative, Aaron Del Grosso. So
I guess
I don't know.
But
it's clear that there's not a ton of confidence, injury
game,
or not. So
yeah, in a 5-point game. They went for it on fourth down twice within – it was maybe extended field goal range, but within range where maybe last year you trot them out. And it was also interesting to talk today, and we'll get into it more on Wednesday, Griffin Oaks kicking on grass. I brought this up last year with the struggles at Michigan State, at Purdue, and in the bowl game was – does he have an issue kicking on grass? And out of nowhere, Wilson said something about that today. I mean, it wasn't out of nowhere. Somebody asked about the field goal unit, but you know, he's been practicing on grass the last couple weeks to get ready for this Northwestern game. But my whole thing is, look, if he's not healthy enough to give you what you need, why is he on kickoffs? Another writer brought that up today as a question. Why is he on kickoffs when you have another kicker who could kick touchbacks? You know, why not save that field goal leg if Del Grosso is not good enough to kick long field goals? Why are you putting extra strain on that quad doing that? So there are a lot of questions which lead you to believe that it's murky waters in Bloomington. You know, they can't get a straight answer on play calling. The philosophy that Wilson talks about is different than what we've seen on the field during play calling. But to me, you know, the offense has got to – if Dan Feeney's not coming back, you've got to adjust. You can't just sit around and wait. As you mentioned, this is a big three-game stretch. I believe they have to go 2-1 in this three-game stretch.
Right.
And it's an absolute must to beat Maryland and Rutgers after this one. You can afford to drop Northwestern, but then the next two are huge before hosting Penn State and then going to Michigan and hosting Purdue. So, you know, the right. bowl game is still there. Your goals are still on the table. But it feels like there's a little uneasiness in Bloomington. They're right there. They have great personnel. The defense is playing fantastic. It's, you know, it's frustrating that Indiana has been so good on offense the last few years that's the part of the game that has almost been a given, is holding them back a little bit.
Yeah. It's part frustrating, but then it's also part encouraging because I do trust over the long haul, so over the course of, and we're talking big picture, so we're talking past just this season, which still has a ton to play for. Like you said, your goals are still in place. No need to panic. So it's encouraging to me a little bit that maybe you've figured out this plague that has been on the defense, and you've gotten up. Not only are you we talked about they just need to be not terrible. Well, not only are they not terrible, they appear to be pretty good, and they're young as well on defense. So there's a lot of reason for optimism there, and I have faith, just based on history, that over the course of Kevin Wilson's tenure in Bloomington, however longer that is, we have no reason to believe it won't be another 5 or 6 years. So over the course of that tenure, he's going to have good offenses. So if they've gotten this defense thing figured out, I feel much better about that than just if the offense continued to, score 40 a game, but the defense continued to stink. I feel better about the overall direction of the program than I have in any time that I can remember as a fan, even though, the being competitive against Ohio State and Nebraska, it's a good sign, but it's not good enough. I understand that. I get the frustration behind the close losses, especially the Nebraska one, which was right there for the taking. You should have won that game. So I get that, but I do think there's reasons to be encouraged about the overall direction of the program. If you go out and lose handily to Northwestern and then, come home and lose to Maryland, then you're like, well, boy, we're probably not going to a bowl game this year. And that takes away the momentum, some of the momentum that you had and really kind of puts a damper on the positive feelings around the program. But we're not there yet. I don't think we're going to get to that point. And we'll deal with it one game at a time. And like you said, the defense continues to be a positive point. It's a pleasure to watch. They're faster than I remember any Indiana defense being. They pursue the ball incredibly well as a unit. And then the tackling is just better than it has been in the recent past, just way better. And they've got guys that you would consider playmakers on the defensive side of the ball in – Marcelino Ball, Tigre Scales, who continues to have an exceptional season, Jonathan Crawford, just a really good young core of players that you continue to enjoy watching every week. At least I do. It's a pleasure to see those guys continue to grow.
Yeah, definitely. And I compared the IU season to a ship earlier today and said, right now, you're okay. You're still afloat. You have, the water's a little rough, but everything's still in front of you. You have three or four, basically five out of the last six are winnable games. If you lose to Northwestern, the water is starting to seep into the boat, but you're still okay. You could still beat Maryland, Rutgers, and Purdue. But to me, the pivotal game coming up is Maryland. That's a game, if you lose, it's at home. If they fall to Maryland, now your ship is sinking, starting to sink and taking on lots of water. And you got to beat Rutgers. If you lose to Rutgers, man, it's all hell's going to break loose. That's a team that's in a spiral right now. They finally broke out of their, three or four game shutout streak going, but they're still not good. They lost to a bad Illinois team who lost to Purdue, who just fired their coach. So there are three wins, and Maryland looks like they're back to earth. And Perry Hills is dealing with the shoulder injury. So a lot of season still in front of IU. A lot of things to be positive about. If they get Feeney back, you could start talking about seven or eight wins. Right now, right. I think six.
Which would be great.
Seven, eight wins would be great, especially with the way this season has gone, and the troubles they've had with the quarterback, getting him into rhythm with the running game, getting that back, and we'll see where it goes from there. Last few minutes, TJ, just what was one of the positive things? You know, we've been very negative on this show today, but what was one of the positive things you took away from the game on Saturday?
Besides just being really competitive with a blue blood program like Nebraska that's having a resurgent season for them, which I know people don't want to hear, oh, we're tired of being competitive. Well, it beats the heck out of getting your ass kicked. So I still take that as an overall positive that it was a game that was right there for the taking. The negative is they didn't take it, but still, I think it's a good sign you continue to be close in these games. So beyond that, for me, a big positive is the continued play of the secondary. Back-to-back weeks against dual-threat quarterbacks JT Barrett and Tommy Armstrong, those guys are not the greatest passers in the world. There's no doubt about that. Tommy Armstrong, not the best decision-maker either, but the secondary really is making these quarterbacks work for everything they get. And that's part due to the defensive line continuing to get penetration and pressure on the quarterback and make them uncomfortable. But it's also the play of the corners and the safeties. Rashard and A'shaun Riggins stand out as the corners, and then Crawford and Chase Dutra looking healthy and being productive. And Marcelino Ball, those guys, they're really doing a nice job. If you take away the big play, which was a scramble broken play to Stanley Morgan, which you can't take it away. I know it happened, but the Brandon Riley circus catch, take those two things away, and Nebraska got absolutely nothing out of the passing game. So I'm very encouraged. I think it's a big-time positive continued play at the secondary. And there's no reason to think that they can't continue to do this.
Yeah, that's a good positive. I think the positive I took away comes a little bit from a negative. It's that they bounced back from 17-0. That game was on the brink of becoming a disappointing blowout. A fluke touchdown. The opening drive was well earned. IU held them to a I think it was a few minutes left in the first quarter, and the came back. They held Nebraska scoreless until the fourth quarter, let up 10 points the rest of the way, and just they put themselves in position to win, but they didn't do it. So this team didn't quit. It doesn't quit. We've said that this over the last couple of years. This team plays its best ball with its back against the wall. And hopefully, we'll see that come out in the next three games. This is IU season right now, is these three games. And it starts at Northwestern on Saturday. And they're going to have to play like they played against Michigan State and against Nebraska in quarters two, three, and half of four. And then, you know, if you things will fall into place, maybe you get a few back, get some competent refereeing. And the guy went humble. I thought there would maybe be 100 to 200 people who had a heart attack. Anyway, that's a story for another day. But you'll start
complaining
to
complaining about the officiating. So good for us.
Yeah, we did. So I marked that down as a win for us, TJ. But
yeah.
You know, play with the effort and the heart that they played with against Michigan State and against Nebraska there for the middle portion of that game, and I think they'll be okay. Hopefully they get Dan Feeney back. But if not, you're going to have to, as Kevin Wilson says, you know, dance with the people who got you there, or dance with the people who you have. So they'll do what they have to do. If Feeney's back, great. If not, let's roll out the ball and let's play some football and try to do and try to win these next three games. So anyway, TJ, thanks for jumping on. Disappointing loss. But lots of season left here at the midway point. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I know everybody, there's another gut punch for sure, but there's still a lot to feel good about with not only the direction of the program, but still what this season can be with games that are certainly winnable. So Indiana doesn't have to pull off any miracles to have a good season. Still, they can take care of the games. They're very capable of winning, and like you said, it's all there in front of them still. So I'm looking forward to Saturday and seeing what this team can do. Finally a noon, or I shouldn't say finally, but actually a noon start for the
11 a.m. TJ,
so,
11 a.m. for
Central.
Us that are covering
yeah,
the game.
You're right.
In Illinois.
You're right.
11 a.m.
Yeah, breakfast in Evanston. There you go.
Yep. But anyway, thanks for listening. Remember, check out HoosierHuddle.com. We have a couple new features this week. We'll have our bowl predictions, projections coming out where each Big Ten team who might be bowl eligible, where they might land, where IU might land. And TJ wrote that up. And, you know, we'll
educated start throwing.
Yes, and it's still a work in progress, so bear with us in terms of where we have people and learning how the bowl system really works with all these conditions and all that stuff. So it is a controlled experiment, and we'll try not to have it blow up in our faces. But we'll have all our regular coverage as well. Our Know Your Opponent should be out later this evening when I get to it. I have learned a lot about Northwestern, so you'll get a good scouting report on them. We'll also have keys to the game, matchup to watch, and some other things coming your way. A little feature on the defensive line this week as well. TJ, thanks again, and we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yes, yeah, looking forward to preview pod on Wednesday. So thanks everybody for listening, and have a good first part of the week.
All right. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy your Monday evening if you watch baseball or Monday Night Football or anything else. Do check out HoosierHuddle.com. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. And, you know, we appreciate your readership.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
and travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel, it's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.